The reading today is taken from the Old Testament book of Proverbs, chapter 31, verses 10 to 31. Ode to a capable wife. A capable wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She is like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from far away. She rises while it is still night and provides food for her household and tasks for her servant girls. She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. She puts her hands to the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle. She opens her hand to the She opens her hand to the poor, and she reaches out to the needy. She is not afraid for her household when it snows, for all her household are clothed in crimson. She makes herself coverings. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known at the city gates, taking his seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them. She supplies the merchant with sashes. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her happy, and her husband too, and he praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful, and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her a share in the fruit of her hands, and let her works praise her in the city gates. This is the word of the Lord.
On June 3rd, we have one of the most famous Old Testament professors in the world coming to preach and to lecture. We're going to have a joint service at Union Church with all the services combined in kind of a very special celebration. One of his students told me after the 9:45 that this guy was the best teacher he ever had. I think we're in for a treat. But I'm a little worried because John Walton is going to ask you, does your regular preacher preach from the Old Testament very much? Most of my sermons are from the New Testament, so I'm kind of cramming right now. We're going to try to get as much Old Testament in before June 3rd. So that when he asks you, you can honestly say, oh, just the other day we heard from the book of Proverbs. Proverbs is a fascinating book, and it's been a discipline of many people, including probably most famously Billy Graham, to read a proverb a day. 31 chapters, one book of Proverbs a day. It's an interesting book. It's very poetic. It's very stylized. It's a series of sayings and aphorisms. Chapter 1 through 9, there's sort of a narrative coherence, and then it just goes into a whole bunch of wise sayings until we get to chapter 31, especially verse 10, at which point it becomes a song in praise of a virtuous or noble or valorous wife. I like that better than just the translation that was read for us. Although, Anisha did a wonderful job reading, but what was it in our translation? I can't even remember. It's capable. Yeah, he was capable. I like She was valorous, noble. This Proverbs, particularly chapter 31, are poetry in a special form. This is a song. In fact, at the 8:45 service, Chris York sang this as a song. And to this day, a Jewish husband on the Sabbath would sing this song of praise to his wife. There are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. There are 22 verses in this passage. Each begins with a different letter. I think you'd call that an acrostic. So I was going to come up with a 22-point sermon, but I thought that would take us till about 3 p.m., so we're not going to do that. I'm going to just have a 4 points. So what does it mean to be wise? And we'll talk about that in a second. I came across a very disturbing survey that was done and commissioned by Time magazine. What percentage of mothers feel they are undervalued by their husbands and their children? What percentage of women feel undervalued by their husbands and their children? Anybody want to hazard a guess? Turn to the person next to you and come up with a number. Okay. Do I hear 50%? Lower than that? Ah. 200 is not too wrong. 86%. So for those of you who are moaning and groaning, oh, it's Mother's Day, we got to make breakfast, we got to get flowers, oh, it's me. That's a scary statistic. 86% of mothers feel undervalued. It gets worse. 72% of women who do not work outside the home feel that women who work outside the home are undervaluing them. And 66% of the women who are working feel that women who are not working outside the home are not valuing them. We've got a real problem here. So in my acrostic, W is going to stand for worth. And this is an incredible proverb about the worth of the mother. Does anyone know how Mother's Day got started? You know, there's a Mothering Sunday in England, and Mother's Day, as it's practiced most of the rest of the world, actually started in the United States. There was a woman by the name Anna Reeves Jarvis. Kind of a sad story. She grew up in Virginia in the years before the American Civil War, so in the 1850s and 60s. And 7 of her children died in childhood. And so she did have 1 or 2 surviving children, and then the Civil War happened, and she found herself in the middle of a group of battles, because a lot of the Civil War was fought in what's the state of Virginia. And it's very interesting. I had an uncle who was a medic at D-Day. And when he would come up to wounded and dying soldiers, what do you think soldiers were yelling? Mother. Well, that was very true in the Civil War. So she found herself spending more and more time helping out soldiers who were wounded and dying in hospitals as sort of a substitute mother. Her own daughter was so impressed that when Anna Reeves Jarvis died, her daughter started a petition that there be a Mother's Day. And this is quite interesting, not just for mothers, but for substitute mothers who are out there. And in 1914, it became a national holiday in the United States. So for this Sunday, we are going to tell women who do not feel that they are appreciated, you are appreciated. You are people of profound worth, and we thank you. And this capable, noble woman is more valuable than fine jewelry. Hard to find, rare, exquisite, a person of great value. But the thing I think that causes women to feel less valued is the kind of impact they have is relational and cannot always be easily measured. Perhaps you've heard of the author Henry Cloud. He is the co-author of the book Boundaries. He's written a number of books. He's a psychologist. He's an executive coach. And in this book, he slams other self-help books because he said it's how you can be better at this, how you can get ahead. He says, you know, behind every you, there is an other. And he talks about other people in your life who've had a tremendous impact. And my hunch is your mother is probably one of those people. At the very end of his book, he shares from a very touching tribute that Michael Eisner, the former CEO of Disney, paid to his friend Frank Walls at Frank Walls' death. We were headed into the toughest challenge of our professional lives. For the next 10 years, that journey would be as exciting, enjoyable, rewarding, and triumphant as either of us could have dared to hope. From our first day in the office that fall, my partnership with Frank Wells taught me what it was like. Now, wouldn't you like to have a work companion like this? Taught me what it was like to work with somebody who not only protected the organization, but protected me. Advised me, supported me, and did it all completely selflessly. I'd like to think that I did the same for Frank as well as the company. We grew together, learned together, and discovered together how to turn what was in retrospect a small business into a very big business. We learned that 1 + 1 adds up to a lot more than 2. We learn just how rewarding working together can be. Now, scholars of Proverbs 31 say it's kind of a life cycle. It's not just a young married couple. It's somebody progressing through life. Somebody who protected me, advised me, supported me, did it selflessly. That sounds a lot like a mother. So he says, if you want to harness the power of the other in your life, you need to be connected. And this is where it gets interesting. He says there are 4 kinds of connection. The first connection is disconnected. And somebody came up to me after one of the morning services and said, boy, my relationship with my mother is a disconnect. The second is a poor connection. Yeah, there's a connection, but it's not a very good one. The third one is one I find most interesting. It's a good connection. But the good connection is phony. Fake it till you make it. You pretend that everything is well, but it really isn't. He says we have to break through to that fourth connection, which is true, authentic connecting. And we have a wonderful opportunity as Christian parents to model in the home what that looks like. But it's not measured in dollars and cents, it's measured in relationships. And that's where I think a lot of women say, hey, I give so much and I have a relational impact, but I don't really see the rewards of that. And so the writer who's singing a song to his wife says, you are worth it. Now, it's very interesting, this study that Time Magazine commissioned. 92% of the women surveyed found out that being a mother was far more difficult than they expected. But almost the same number said it was far more rewarding than they expected. The Translation, The Message says there should be a festooning of praise to the mother. So a wise woman is a woman of worth. I, in my little acrostic, stands for industry. Oh my goodness, have you ever seen such a hard-working woman as this woman in Proverbs 31? Somebody came up to me again and said, thanks for making me feel even worse about myself than I did before I came to church. It's an impossible standard. I mean, this woman gets up before everybody else, fixes breakfast, organizes the household, and she labors long into the night. I love, she does not eat the bread of idleness. I was talking to a mother of a newborn, says, I know just how that woman feels. It's a 24/7 job being mother. But notice, not only does she take care of the household really well, she's an entrepreneur. She goes and buys a field, plants, and has a good return on her investment. To be industrious, to be organized, she organizes the household. Now, I don't want to pick on the guys, but it is Mother's Day. So we do have to say, the women's ministry at this church is absolutely thriving. And we're struggling with men's ministry. And finally, one of the women came up and we said, well, do you guys need someone to help you organize things? I said, we probably do. Oh, that might be the secret. Again, unsung heroes. This woman is just nonstop working. And the message has a great line. She appreciates the value of work, the worth of work. But then in verse 20, we go from her industry for her own good, for the good of her family, to someone who's a servant. And not just to her family, but to the poor and the outcast. I think that's really, really important. We hold up this wonderful woman. She's the sort of woman who would volunteer to be a mentor for the Church Network for the Poor. She understands that there are people far less fortunate than she is. She is the one, if she was in India, who would be working at your orphanage as a volunteer. She has a heart for the poor and for the oppressed. There's a tenderness there. And she is tender with her children. And then there's this very interesting verse that during the winter won't be bad because the kids are clothed. I read this week that a long time ago in Wales, there was a mother who had a baby and they started out on what should have been a pretty short journey and then a horrible blizzard came up. And people went out looking for the mother and they found her dead. But she'd taken off all her overclothes and wrapped them around this little baby who lived. And that baby later became David Lloyd George, the Prime Minister of England during World War I. A sacrificial service, not just to family, but to the world out there. That's the kind of woman who makes a difference. That's the kind of wife that this guy's singing about. And the E is she's a wonderful example. She's a wonderful mentor. My mother passed away a little over 2 years ago, and I still am getting emails from people who tell me what an impact my mother had on their lives, not just as an example, but as a mentor. And again, that may not look all flashy, but the impact that mothers have on their children and on others is profound. Someone after one of the services was asked, are you a mother? And she said, well, I'm not a natural mother, but I'm a spiritual mother. At the 9:45 service, Auntie Pauline was here. She just turned 102. And at her 101 birthday party, I sat next to a university student who said, I met Auntie Pauline at a restaurant several years ago, and we go out to lunch occasionally, and she's taught me so much about life. What an opportunity we have to be an example. And notice it talks about her dignity. It doesn't talk about her beauty. She is someone who is praised, called blessed by her children, and praised by her husband. She is a wise woman. But again, oh my goodness, how do you live up to Proverbs 31? That's sort of an interesting question when you think of the book of Psalms. When the Old Testament professor says, well, when your preacher preached on Proverbs, what did you learn about Proverbs? And the hint is, it's all about wisdom versus being foolish, being wise or foolish. And this is a wise woman. But it's an idealized wise woman. There was a little boy who was asked what mothers are made of. He said, angel's hair, the best of earth with a dab of mean. You know? And there is kind of a dab of mean in all of us, isn't there? So there's no way we can live up to this, you know, perfect example of motherhood. But it's interesting, in the Hebrew Bible, guess what book follows the book of Proverbs? The book of Ruth. Now, we know a lot about Ruth, right? She was a widow. She was from a foreign country, but she decided to go back with her mother-in-law to serve and take care of her mother-in-law. She had no obligation so to do, so she's certainly a servant. Remember those great verses, your people will become my people, your God will become my God. So the Moabite woman Ruth goes with Naomi, the Jewish woman, back to Jerusalem. And there she meets somebody. Do you know who that person is? Boaz. Now forgive me. Please forgive me ahead of time. Do you know what Boaz was before he met Ruth? Ruthless. Oh, I'm sorry. It won't happen again. No. Okay. But Boaz is approached by Ruth, and Ruth says, hey, my mother-in-law and I are starving, and you've got this field of grain. After your workers are done with it, can we go into the field and just pick up whatever's left over? And Boaz says, sure. And then his foreman comes back to him and says, you know that woman? She went out early in the morning, and she's still out there gathering grain. Industrious. And the two of them fall in love and get married. And they have a son who probably not many of us know. I think his name is Obed. You can check in the last verses of Ruth. But Obed has a son with Ruth by the name of Jesse. And Jesse has a son by the name of David. So here's this foreign, non-Jewish woman who's in the genealogy of the greatest king that Israel ever had. And then you go into the New Testament, and who's from the house of David? Jesus Christ. Mothers, you may not be the idealized wise woman of Proverbs 31, but you can be a Ruth, or you can be a you, and the impact you have on this world, starting with your children and your husband, will last into all eternity.